well, so you can kind of get an idea if you're not sure what things may be. But definitely, I recommend folks to to understand maybe some basic characteristics of some invasives, because it won't tell you exactly what it is. It's just more like if you know what it is, you can report it.
Okay, that's great. Well, it sounds like there's lots of ways people can get involved. I mean, this is an issue, we hear about in the news from time to time, and I'm not sure we always understand just how important it is. But through, things like the app and the programs you're running and the information on your website, there's lots of ways people can contribute.
Absolutely. Yeah, and one thing for that we definitely want to encourage is for folks to just be able to gain a curiosity about the environment in which we live, right? And we do this because yeah, there are so many incredible native species in our area, and we're really privileged to have access to natural spaces where we actually do see the majority of, for example, native species. And that's something that we're incredibly proud of, and is something that we can try to maintain through all these different initiatives.
Great. Well, tell me about how people can access the resources on your website.
Yeah, so you can find us at iscmv.ca, and essentially there are a bunch of different tabs on the left side of the homepage, and whatever you're particularly interested in, you can take a look and click on one of these pages, and it will just send you to a specific site where it will then kind of lay out exactly what it is that we offer. And so and also there's a button on the bottom of the homepage where you can sign up for our newsletter. So we kind of do like a bit of a quarterly newsletter, and this kind of gives a summary of like what we've been up to, and also promote the events that we're running. And also we'd like to share some relevant news regarding invasive species, particularly to Metro Vancouver and the province.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Adrian Avendano, from the Invasive Species Council of Metro Vancouver. Lots of information on that on their website, which is iscmv.ca. .ca? Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah.
And there are a lot of programs you can, if you're listening, interested in this issue, of course, you can read up more from their website, but also get involved with some of the programs, like the ones, collaborations with City of Burnaby, New West, Delta, and other organizations. More information on the city websites, but also the ISCMV website as well. Thank you so much for joining me, Adrian Avendano.
Yeah, no, thank you, Magnus. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
And enjoy your summer out pulling up those invasive species.
Oh, yeah, we'll do our best.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining me. All right, and if you're interested in, we talked a bit about it in the interview, but if you're interested in helping out there, the ISCMV runs a number of programs in collaboration with area municipalities and other organizations here in Burnaby. There's the Burnaby Environmental Stewardship, and they have events, I think, every other weekend, maybe even more frequently, often up here on Burnaby Mountain and in Deer Lake and other places. You can find out more about those programs from the Burnaby City of Burnaby website. Just search for Burnaby Environmental Stewardship. You can find about some of the other programs on the ISCMV website. And, it's not only a chance to help out your community, but also get out with some other like-minded folks and maybe make some new friends.
Okay, now I don't usually watch W5, but this.
And for those of you who don't, W5 is a investigative journalism program.
CTV is almost as old as I am. Yep. I'm a bit older than W5 anyway. Yep. Anyway, this was about 3 years ago. So what it's called the feral pig. Now, this is what happened. Farmers in Canada and the United States wanted to create a better pig. So they took, like, kind of the ordinary farm pig, and they took, like, a boar, and they bred it. But what they didn't know what was going to happen was they were going to invent a smarter pig, a pig bigger, stronger, and smarter, that knew they were going to be slaughtered. So they escaped. And actually, there's as many of these feral pigs in Texas as there are people in Vancouver, supposedly. From that report, I guess we in the metro Vancouver area have been spared this. However, a Vancouver Island golf course hasn't, which means it must have been a farmer created to try to do the pigs and they escaped. Because I don't think they could swim very well, but anyway, no. It's actually in the report. One person said I tried to tell people about it was a scientist or whatever, and he said I tried to tell people about this 10 years ago. We could have got rid of them, and he said they're going to last at least 1,000 years. And what happens is that the parents teach the children how to avoid bullets or how the best way. So they have been shooting them in helicopters. Like you're in the helicopter shooting at them, and they only get about half of them, supposedly.
They've learned how to sort of hide from the helicopters.
So go to the internet and just put feral pig, and you'll get a lot of things on it. But fortunately, I guess, in this metro Vancouver area, we've been spared this, mm-hmm. unlike the Vancouver Island golf course. Yep. But I had to say about this, because he didn't say one thing about it.
All right. Next up, we have Gardening with Embark. And we'll be talking... Well, I'll leave it with that for you. And then we'll be back with Peter for the end of the show. Welcome to Gardening with Embark. Joining me in the studio today, as every week, is Pablo Vimas, Gardens Manager for Embark Sustainability Society here at SFU. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
I believe it is week 21.
Correct, 21. Yes, and a strange week. It started very cold. Mm-hmm. On Monday was very, very cold. Over the weekend, we had hail and heavy rain here on Burnaby Mountain.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, and Monday very cold. And yesterday and today, the weather decided to warm up. And it seems that we're heading into a
warm stretch.
That's right. Last week we talked about start the summer gardening.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the crops that we always plant over the summer is corn.
Right.
Well, who doesn't like corn?
Yeah.
So there are different varieties of corn, including the popcorn, which is a type of corn.
Yeah.
And then we have the peach, yellow peach corn, the sweet corn, white corn, yellow corn, pink corn, purple corn.
Yeah.
Either for consumption or for decoration, if you want to have popcorn for corn for decoration. So,
yeah.
This is the time to start planting. Corn is we can grow only once a year. It's a crop that requires lots of sunlight and good weather. So how we start here in our gardens, we have garden beds 4 feet by 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole garden bed is covered with corn.
Right.
We plant 4 corns per square.
Per square foot?
Per square foot.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a decent amount of corn. So we're having about 16 squares, so the times 4, 6. Yeah, you make the math, and then how many corns we have. We usually put 2 seeds,
mm-hmm.
and when one of the seeds have germinated, we trim the weak one, so leaving one big stalk in there.
That just sort of gives you some extra insurance to make sure you got something for every spot.
Correct. So with corn, we can pre-soak overnight,
mm-hmm.
so to encourage the water to go inside the seed and start to the germination process. But sometimes one of the seeds is dead. So in order to secure that, we have a plant in the spot, we put 2 seeds.
Right.
And we put around 2 to 3 inches deep. Yeah, so that's where the corn. And
how long does it take once you put the seeds in? How long before you're going to start seeing a shoot?
Well, it's around 13 weeks since before we can see any corn.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, so like even before the shoot comes up?
When shoot comes out is a week.
Oh, okay.
A week, 7 days. Yeah.
After a week or so, that's when we're looking to make that choice.
Yeah.
Go with the strongest.
Yeah, so after 15 days, we should have all the germinated seeds, and then you can do the choice to trim one and leave the other there. The whole crop lasts for 13 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and so that's why
that brings us to about the end of August.
Correct. Yep. So beginning of September. So.
Yeah.
So when the weather just start turning to cold, and yeah, so that's with corn.
And once they once the corn's there, how long does it start producing? Is it one big rush of ears that you get, or does?
Oh yeah, so we get just, well, the ears you can have up to four. Mm-hmm. If there's a good variety.
Yeah.
The ears you will be harvesting from the bottom, close to the ground up.
Yeah.
And how you know that it is ready to harvest is when you touch, when the silks are brown,
mm-hmm.
and then you will try to fill the kernels through the husk.
Right.
Or you can just break a little bit of the husk and see how the kernels are.
Yeah.
And then you can pinch one of the kernels. If a white liquid is coming, it's not ready yet.
Yeah.
But if a milky liquid is coming, the corn is ready to eat as a fresh corn.
Right.
If we want to wait till have a completely hard corn, we have to wait till the plant dies.
So that's when it's sort of hard and like dried out.
Dried out, yeah. So that would be, for instance, for the popcorn. The popcorn, we need a mature ear. We don't need a milky one. Yes.
Okay. So when you do that, the popcorn, A, is it a specific variety, and B,
it has
can you actually, you know, take the kernels off and pop it?
when the corn is completely dry, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
When it's in a milky state, no, you could consume as a fresh corn, but it will be a bit chewy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Corn has some diseases too.
Yep.
We have the main fungi growing sometimes in the corn, in the ear, mm-hmm. corn ear itself. And the other is the yellow, the leaves can be with some rust, a yellow fungi growing in there as well. Here in our garden, sometimes it shows up, sometimes it doesn't. So since it's a small plot and we are just for fun as well growing, mm-hmm. so we don't care much about that. Sometimes we have aphids here and we have wasps.
Mm-hmm.
Just they are in the corn because of the aphids secreting this honeydew, and wasps are attracted. So we have wasps. So far, nothing has happened. Nobody got stung. But yeah, you might see some wasps just hanging around because of all this honeydew.
And then the other thing we're looking at growing, or putting in the ground now, which also comes up around the end of the summer, is pumpkins and other sort of squash.
That's right. That's right. So what we call the winter squashes.
Yeah.
They're called winter squash because fruits are ready for consumption over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why. So we have the pumpkins, the peanut, the butternut squash, acorn squash. So those are what we consume over the winter. So this is the time to plant as well. If you have heard before, we have the three sisters, beans, corn, and squashes all grown together.
Yeah.
In this case, we are talking about growing separately.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because of the how our boxes are. So we can plant squashes, being pumpkins or acorn or butternut squash. We plant one squash per 2 square feet.
Yeah.
So one squash for 2 square feet. So in our garden base, 4 feet by 4 feet, we can plant up to 2 plants in that space.
Right.
Yeah. Then it's up to us if we would like just them to let them run, spread themselves, or we can create a trellis. We train the plant to climb the trellis. So that's in order to go vertical.
Yeah.
But as squashes are known in the three sisters, is the running sister, the running away sister.
Yeah.
It just goes all over the place. There is no way to keep it controlled. It climbs fences.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I like to have it more like in our garden, just covered in the ground, which is quite nice. Yeah. Again, the seeds are covered with a very strong husk. So if you ever have eaten pumpkin seeds, you see mm-hmm. how difficult sometimes it is just to take the seed coat. So what we can do is just do a small trim at the end of the seed, at the base of the seed, in order to allow the water to get inside the seed and kicking the germination process. So after that, in a week time, seeds will germinate. pumpkin doesn't like to be transplanted. Mm-hmm. Somehow has a tap root that doesn't like to be disturbed.
Right.
So what some tricks have come is sometimes we have these strawberry baskets with a kind of a meshy system. It's a meshy strawberry basket. Plant in there and the walls basket goes into the ground.
Right.
So now we can use as well paper pots, which will dissolve in once we transport. So they don't like to be transplanted. So you have to plant straight in the ground.
Right.
And then, yeah, again, 130 days to wait. So we're talking about 17 weeks for having a pumpkin. If we are going to consume over the winter, we need to wait that the pumpkin matures on the vine. Yeah. When we harvest, we have to make sure that there is at least 2 inches of vine from the pumpkin itself or from the gourd itself. Yeah. So don't cut the vine close to the fruit. Right. We need to leave a little tail at the end.
And this applies to the pumpkin and the other squash?
And the other squashes, yeah. So don't, because somehow as the plant, as the fruit matures and is stored, this little stump of the vine starts to shrinkle and prevent any disease for the fruit.
Right.
Yeah, so that's one thing. The other is you can plant the seeds, put the seeds 2 inches deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the corn is 2 to 3 for the squash, 2 inches deep. And yeah, every time we wait around a week for see how it does germinate.
Yeah.
The squash when we see the plant mature, we have this disease called the white mildew, which is a powdery mildew, powdery covering the leaves of the squash. That is when plants start getting old, or the when we water the leaves of the squash.
Oh, okay.
That is another thing that shows up when we are so happy spraying the leaves with water, mildew will show up.
Right. So again, as we've talked about before, water the soil, not the plant.
Yeah. Again, so kind of if we want to delay the showing up of the white powdery mildew, water the soil.
Yeah.
And so this disease will show up when the plant is old. As well, with squash, remove any dead leaf, remove any sick leaf, or remove any yellow leaf. So it's just from using a scissors or pruners, you can just cut the leaves and leave the stem alone. Yeah. So that's with pumpkin. And
great.
Well, by October, we should have lots of pumpkin and squashes. And ready for making pumpkin pie and all of the delicious stuff for pumpkins. Yeah.
Excellent. One thing I think I moved you away from the corn too quickly, but you do have to help with the pollination of corn, right?
Yes, yes. As we have talked before, all the grasses pollinate through wind.
Yeah.
So the corn is a grass, a type of grass. So we need to help. So what we can do is to cut the tassels with a scissors when they are nice and open, and you can see the stems holding the pollen. You just can cut it there and shake it on top of the silks, hopefully that you help to pollinate. Yeah. So there's another fun thing to do in the garden. if you have some extra time, help the plant to get fertilized and have nice corn.
Excellent. All right. Corn and squash and pumpkins in the garden now, and you'll have your bounty come the fall.
That's right. Yeah. So, we are thinking and harvesting for the fall.
Well, I guess as a gardener, you're always thinking ahead, right?
Yes. And I hope that the weather really warms up. Yeah. And so both crops, squash and corn, they need to be watered when there is a dry spell, a period that we don't have any rainfall. So we need to water. And when we have rain, like over the weekend, we have to wait 48 hours before I start thinking to water.
Right.
Yeah, so we had rain, so yesterday was good, today is good. I will be planning to water over the weekend.
Great. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Pablo, for joining us and helping us get our corn and squash and whatnot in the garden.
Happy to be here and happy to share all these little tips and experience that we have here.
Great. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society. How do we find out more about Embark?
Embark is based in the Studio Union building, the first floor. You can look at our website, embarksustainability.org. and follow our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Excellent. Thanks so much. See you next week.
See you next week.
And despite the weather, what it looks like out there right now here in Vancouver and the lower mainland, the weather is going to be trending towards a little nicer as the week goes on. Chances of showers today, highs to 18, but then it's warming up with by Wednesday. It's going to be clear and sunny with highs up to 24. A little rain on Thursday and then back to sun for the weekend. So that's our forecast for this weekend. If you want to comment on anything you hear here on CJSF or on this program, you can send us a text right here in the studio at 778-782-2573. That's 778-782-CJSF. And we'd love to hear from you about anything you hear on Speak Up any day of the week or any of our other programs. Or maybe you have some information you want to pass along that you hope we can share with our listeners. All that is great. So give us a message. You can also call us in the studio. But, you know, when we're doing a show like this, we can't really pick up in the middle of things necessarily. Although if you call the music shows, they love to hear from you. So do that instead. Once again, that number is 778-782-2573, 782-CJSF. Give us a call. Give us a text. Let us know what you think. Peter.
Yeah, anyway, so I had a bit of change in plan because I have to verify some information I was doing. Anyway, it was here was the name of it. It was Philosophy at UBC, Exploring the Concept of Progress in History. And it said no instructor earned 3 credits. And I thought that was intriguing, but then, of course, it had already happened. And there was quite a few of these damn posters up. But I was able to meet with the person who had conducted it, and I got a reading list of it.
What's the course called?
Exploring the Concept of Progress in History.
Okay.
That's the name of it.
Yeah.
And so as he gave me a reading list, the person, they got a student to head it. I think he's out in Ontario or something. Hopefully we can, in future, I'll be able to contact him. One thing, it kind of starts out with the ancient Greece. So part of the reading list is 1973 E.R. Dobbs, and a 1973 essay, The Ancient Concept of Progress and Other Essays on Greek Literature and Belief. And there's something else from 2009, The Evolution of Darwinism. So they had Darwinism and Evolutionary Progress, and is evolution progressive? Now, maybe they're just talking about the concept of it, how it was brought into society.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like to do is sort of seems out of the sphere of this course. And it's interesting that you would think that the wheel was invented prior to a fire being part of fire being mm-hmm. controlled. Now, interestingly, fire is even beyond before our species. We're Homo sapien, mm-hmm. then there's Neanderthal, and there's Homo erectus. Homo erectus was actually, that's about 2 million years ago, probably from lightning or something, they started controlling fire. And then about 50,000 years ago, like the Neanderthals, they're, I always think, you always think with the cliches, the two sticks of wood, right, inducing a fire, but it was actually by stone first.
Mm-hmm.
So the human species had fire, but they weren't able to artificially induce it.
Right.
But the other thing is that you would have, even the artificial inducement of fire is prior to the wheel. And the wheel, in fact, you know, there's that show Quirks and Quarks
mm-hmm.
on
yep.
the competition.
Yeah, on the CBC.
CBC Radio. They did a report on it. I was a bit surprised, too, because it wasn't really what I think about a lot. But I said, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So what it is that the wheel seemed, which is actually, it's sometimes you got to you need the sprocket or
the axle.
The axle, that's an important concept in it. Like but the Egyptians had rolling logs, mm-hmm. but that's really not quite the thing.
Well, you can imagine the big difficulty. I mean, I'm sure people understood the idea that round things roll, and some, you know, and then you would use logs or similar things to transport heavy over short distances. But you can see the sort of challenge of figuring out how to make an axle, and then you got to lubricate it because, of course, the axle and the wheel are spinning, but the cart or whatever is not, and creating something that actually works and doesn't wear away in almost no time at all.
But how they are proposing that it was invented, you would have thought that copper mining is a bit more of a kind of elaborate thing than the wheel. But supposedly it came forth because in sort of the Eastern European era going towards the Middle East, that's where they did some copper mining. And they were dragging, like, mm-hmm. the cate of the, you know, they would go in, get the copper, put it in the box, and dragging it. And they said, well, why don't, I think maybe a wheel thing would kind of work. But the thing is, you would think mining is much more of an elaborate concept than a wheel. But I guess it's hard to get things round.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, with the mining, you're sort of digging and, you know, it's sort of an extension of things you're already doing. I mean, if you're going underground a bit, which you might, then you start figuring out ways to sort of prop up your holes so it doesn't collapse on you. Although I bet that happened a lot. But you're still just using the technologies that some sort of shovel device and some sort of pick device. I'm assuming, you know, the earliest mines probably wouldn't would have been going through softer material to get to wherever the ore was. And then you drag it out, and then that's a whole different process of melting it down.
So the ancient Greeks, because mm-hmm. it was around 3,500, 3,030, 50 BC. So the ancient Greek civilization kind of inherited that. And so it's interesting that arguably Western civilization starts but was Homer, which is about 800 BC, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that they inherited a few things. What happened, supposedly, there was a thriving, in the Mediterranean Sea area, a thriving trading thing, and it collapsed prior mm-hmm. to Homer and the ancient Greeks.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really have time to get into it, but it's sort of, I've read a bunch about it, you know, and they talk about the sea peoples who were like the Phoenicians and I guess were, you know, moving around in boats and I don't know, disrupted the trade. And I think part of the issue is that, you know, that was sort of the Bronze Age. And the problem with bronze, because the Bronze Age happens and then it's the Iron Age, right? But the problem with bronze is to make bronze from copper, you need tin, and tin is very rare in that part of the world. So that might have been part of it. But because there's not a lot of documentation available, they're still not really clear from what all I've read why that Bronze Age collapse happened.
But the main point is that a lot of it got lost, and we have the, like Homer does a type of pseudo-historian thing.
Yeah.
And also ones after Homer. And so it's sort of thought that a lot of that was forgotten but kind of revived a mm-hmm. bit. But so Western civilization sort of inherited the wheel, which is a major thing. Now, you know that Charles Salt said the hardest thing about drawing peanuts was drawing Charlie Brown's round head. So there you go. It's not so and they said Leonardo da Vinci was able to draw a perfect circle. So he had some chalk, and they knew he had come by because he drew a perfect circle.
Right.
So maybe that's why it took a while to invent it.
Well, getting things perfectly round is not easy.
Yeah.
All right. We are almost out of time here at Speak Up. Democracy Now! Is coming up in 30 seconds. And after that, there will be Wandering Rhythms with Nick Legacy. and a lot more great programming coming up here on CJSF. I'm going to let Hallelujah Halu play us out here. She's a local musician. Check her out. She's really great.